Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, we are going to do it right, but there are some people in the world who are not just doing it right. They're doing it illegally, immorally, unethically. And so we have to rise up, y'all. We have to pay attention and we have to stay woke. So this is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield. And I am glad you are joining us today. We have some special guests, but before we do that, I want to remind you, as you already know, particularly from this last week, that we still have a 34-count felon in the White House who's a pathological liar and guardian of pedophiles. He's a war criminal, and he has taken this world to the brink of disaster. Everything he touches turns to, he thinks it turns to gold, but it's that cheap gold. But, you know, I'm not superstitious, but I do know that the only game the Knicks lost was the one that he attended. So that kind of bad energy kind of follows people sometimes. But we are still in the grips of an illegal war. That's why he's a war criminal. And he's a war criminal also because the first place that they bombed in Iran was a children's school. That's against the Geneva Convention. So we need to know what these folks are doing in our name with our tax dollars. So, you know, when that, we had the spectacle on the lawn, the UFC, and some people have given those, that acronym some new meaning. I won't say it on air, but you had a boxing match on the lawn of the White House, which is, you know, partially been destroyed with the West Wing being taken down. And this is another reminder. Our people of African descent, helped to build that place. So it's our house. It's our house because we built it, but it's also our house because we are taxpayers. So we have had nothing to do with any of the decisions that this man has made in our name using our tax dollars. So that's unsustainable, you all. It's unsustainable. So he spent $600 million to change the pool. Change the color of the pool so that it would be in sync with this boxing match. $16 million. And the reason it cost so much, because it was a rush job. So these people know that this is a fool. So they probably padded the expenses. But guess what? Now that pool is turning green with algae. And when I see it, family, it reminds me of a swamp. And I say, this is exactly a metaphor, just like that tearing down of the West Wing is a metaphor for the destruction that Trump is doing in this country and the world. That wading pool, that reflecting pool turning green with algae is another metaphor. So, you know, there's signs that we are being given that we need to wake up before this man takes us on over the edge. But we got some work to do. So what I'm going to suggest today, and this is bolder than I've ever been, we need, in the wake of this being the 250th anniversary of this country, this is a young democracy. It's an experiment that's not quite working well, but, you know, we haven't given up on it yet, right? We need to declare that the democracy is on hold because of who's in the White House, and then we need to act accordingly. We do not have a democracy right now, you all. A democracy includes the people. It includes the branches of government. It includes respect and upholding of the Constitution. None of that is happening right now. So we have to admit that we really don't have a democracy. So when you admit that, then it forces you to take another path, not one of least resistance or not one of passivity or complicity, but one of, what am I going to do today to advance democracy? personally and collectively? Who do I need to connect with? Because this, we're living in some dangerous times, and it's not going to get any better. Now, I know I've been saying that for the last year. As we approach the midterms, this man is going to get more desperate, and it's going to show up in our communities. So let's just be aware of that. Let's think about what we need to do to counteract that. And let's move like we have some purpose in this life, that we understand what a democracy looks like. And so there's going to be a little change in the way that the format goes today. Usually I do the announcements at the end. I have a special gift for you at the end. So we're going to do announcements now, not all of them, because one of them is showing up tomorrow. So I do want to announce that. That is it's called Health, Held, and Healing. And it is tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Drip Community Coffee House. And that's over there on Potomac. This is going to be up on my website. So if you don't get it now, you can get it later. And there's going to also be all of the Juneteenth stuff going on. So Friday, the Juneteenth celebration is going to be at the Griot Museum. And then there's some others that are actually on Saturday. So find out if you don't know what Juneteenth is about and why it's celebrated, because this is a holiday that your president is trying to undo and undermine. And so we might look up next year and it may not be a Juneteenth. So let's reflect on what it means to be of African descent in this country as we approach the 250th anniversary and what we need to do differently. There's also Lance Thurman, who is one of our young photographers in this area, is having, a showing. I'll have that up on the website, JamalaRogers.com. And so you can see all of the stuff that's going. So it's plenty for you to do. It doesn't need to be all seriousness. There's some fun stuff too. So please partake of that. Held and Healing is the screening. And you need to understand this is about advocacy at the intersection of pregnancy, incarceration, and addiction. So a documentary of some of the stories of people whose lives have been affected by those issues. That's tomorrow, June 18th, 6 p.m. at the Drip Community Coffee House. And that is a female-owned facility. So we need to support those folks over there. So without further ado, this is the big thing, y'all. This is one of my favorite people who left us much, much too soon. You know, Cora Faith Walker. Every time I think about that name, I just can't help but see her face with a big smile, because people will say her smile lit up a room, but it really did. It really did. That's not just, a trite saying. But Cora left us 4 years ago. She had a condition that was undiagnosed. It was cardiomyopathy. And, you know, when this happens, sometimes this causes us to really delve deeper into some of these medical conditions, because I had not had heard of that. But what I found out is that 85% of the people who have it don't know it, because it's really hard to diagnose. So she literally dropped dead at then Mayor Tashara Jones' birthday party. And so didn't have a chance to say goodbye, didn't have a chance to wrap up what she was doing. She was gone. And so when you leave us like that, it's hard to fill that hole. But literally within months, her family and loved ones put together a foundation, the Cora Faith Walker Foundation. And I think that's a testament to how she lived her life and the people that she touched. And so part of that foundation was giving out scholarships, and we have recipients, two of them. And there have been four in this short time that have received this. And we've raised thousands of dollars to make sure that they get what they need. But today we have Kara Kendrick and Caden Gully with us. And they're going to tell us a little bit about them. But welcome to the show, Caden and Kara.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
And you know, one of the things when I look at y'all, I said, wow, they look so young. I thought Caden was still in high school. Now, I met you, Kira, so I knew that you were in college and about to graduate. But yeah, and so I think about young people and what's going on in our world today and what we need to do for you all. And this show and you all inspired me to write. You know, I do a column for the St. Louis American. And this week, hopefully it'll show up this week, but I wrote a column about like how we in some ways have failed young black people because we've given them rose colored glasses, but we haven't made the forecast for them rosy. And what I mean by that is we can tell you all, be whatever you want in this world. You can be whatever you want in the world, but we didn't equip you to what happens when you come across those landmines and those, you know, obstacles that are based on being black, based on being female, based on being a male, based on being gay. And so sometimes those are setbacks for young people because it's like, wait a minute, I'm doing all that I was told to do. This is what my parents told me to do, work twice as hard, and I will get these things. And then you realize, bam, bam, maybe that's not true. So I'm going to just say for Caden and Kira, just tell us a little bit about you, where you've gone to school, what your major is, and both of you all have very interesting majors. So when you talk about it, I want you to tell us why you chose that particular field and what you hope to do. So Kira, why don't you start first?
Okay, well, my name is Kira Kendrick. I am now a senior at Harris Stowe State University. My major is psychology. Now, I've chosen psychology because I've been a shy and observant kid my whole life. I found a way to connect to people. I found a way to understand humans more on a deeper mental level. And that's why I chose to major in psychology. I felt that I was really good at connecting with people. And so that's why I chose psychology as my major.
And I would have to say, Kira, if you are observant, you also saw that our people are in need of some extra help.
Yes.
And that's because of the trauma. That's because of, you know, the things that we've had to go through based on racism. And so when you picked that major, what did you hope to accomplish by becoming a psychology major? And what you like to do with that particular skill?
What I hoped to accomplish, I feel like when you speak about racism, it is like more swept under the rug nowadays. And I feel like people have become desensitized to it as if it's like, oh, it's just a thing. Like we should just like black people should just get over it. And no, we shouldn't. We're not going to get over that. We'll never get over that as long as it's a problem till this day. How many people fought to be included in so many spaces because of their skin color? And what I hope to accomplish being a psychologist is for people to be more aware of this situation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see your impact. Caden, what about you? Because you have an interesting field of study, and I'm just curious of what you plan to do with that.
Yes. Hello, my name is Caden Gully. I am a sophomore, going to be a junior next year at Tuskegee University. I am a forestry and wildlife major. That's my major for a couple reasons. I love nature. Like my whole life, I've just really been into the outside world and figuring out how things work. An extension of that was my major was originally political science, but I'm at an agriculture school. But I figured out I could basically go into environmental law if I would want to as well through my major. So it kind of worked out hand in hand for me. First off, I love nature, and then I also have the ability to go to law school. The reason I want to go to law school is to kind of create an impact. I recognize I have an opportunity in this world. I'm here. I can enjoy myself. But what type of impact do I want to leave behind in the world? I feel like that's the most important thing that I can do with my life, because I have as much time as I have and I can enjoy it, but if I don't leave a lasting impact, then I mean, I can live for myself, but it's better to, in my opinion, leave an impact on the world when I have the time.
That is sounding so much like core faith. Yeah. So it's interesting that you chose that, but I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Kira, and that is, as you're looking around, you are seeing the policies and laws that are impacting, and even people, corporations in particular, their practices on our environment, and particularly on our air, water. And so I
Yeah.
guess you can't help but say, okay, this, if we don't save our planet, whether we are sane human beings that Kira is trying to create, that we are sane and responsible, we won't have a planet to enjoy.
I can speak to that a little bit. Being honest, you spoke about how America was an ex is an experiment, and it really is. I think to a point, this is the point that we're at, is just kind of ends kind of meeting. For example, we've never been necessarily a country that has cared too much about the native population or anything. That's not, I guess, rich white people. But because of that, this is kind of where ends meet. We have someone in office who is like a really terrible person, but that's just kind of because of the social situation within America that allowed for that to happen. And same thing when it comes to, I guess, my major and nature in general. It's just we not necessarily cared about the environment for so long, or cared about anything that wasn't necessarily making profit quotas, that these situations that are coming up, for example, like forest fires in California and all this like destruction, it's just kind of happening because it was kind of foretold to because of our country's lack of concern about things.
Absolutely. And even now, a lot of the struggles that people concerned about the environment did in the 60s and 70s, that's how the EPA was founded, the Environmental Protection Agency. These activism advocates that said, whoa, 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 you're polluting the air, the water, we need some boundaries here.
Yes.
All of that now is being erased by these corporations who are, bow kowtowing to Trump. And one of the things that happened this week, last week, Caden, that I think might interest people like you is that these billionaires now are being given access to the purchase of natural public lands. And this is this is unspeakable, first of all, because there's millions of acres that have been designated as public lands, parks, whatever. These people have no use for that except for their own enjoyment, where they, as Epstein did, buy a damn island. And in this case, these people are buying like millions of one particular person in Montana. Well, if you ever been to Montana, it's beautiful. The mountains are pristine. And now you get this person who wants to buy all the land, and he's being allowed to do that. What impact do you think that's going to have for the future of America?
I think it's unfortunate to say that it really does have a big impact, because the natural environment, if it's not being protected or in the hands of like someone who like actively cares on protecting it, it's gonna get trotted over. Again, I hate to keep on beating a dead horse, but this is kind of what's happened throughout American history. So, yeah, I think it's a bad case. Something that I can speak to in my own experience because of the USDA and Trump's getting elected is because there was this USDA scholarship that I was going to potentially get. It was like a full ride, but cuts and cancellations in the USDA program made the scholarship kind of disappear because of money and whatnot. But it's really affecting all facets of reality right now. I mean, I believe that this was at the end of the day going to happen, is late stage capitalism, but it kind of got sped up faster than we would think. For example, grocery prices have been rising since the 80s, and now it just kind of sped up. It just kind of skipped like a decade. But at the same time, unfortunately, we're at the same spot that it was kind of going to get to if things didn't change.
I'm thinking about both of you all are at historically black campuses. Do you think that is helping you understand the world, or is that creating a bubble for you? Because there's a certain protectiveness that black colleges have for black students. You know, they know what you get ready to go through, and there's a certain, you know, structure of protection, and particularly from professors and instructors, that, you know, these black kids, they gonna have all these challenges, so we need to protect them. So what have you found by going for yourself and your own development, particularly academically, and what has been your stance? Do you feel like you in a bubble, or you feel like you getting the best of, like, the real world? What, Kira?
Sorry. I kind of feel both, if that makes sense, because mainly I feel like I got that protectiveness from a few professors that I had throughout my college career. Like, I could literally count on my fingers, but I wouldn't say that the whole college really, you know, embrace every student from the impact. I feel like my school focuses on certain students that are involved in certain clubs and organizations, instead of students that mainly want to focus on their academics. So I feel like I'm in, but I'm out. Like, I'm in a bubble, but I'm not, because I did have professors that protected me, that really cared. But I wouldn't say that for the whole college. Like, I feel that even if there are students that are just focusing on their academics, that should make them be, that should have them be successful enough. I don't feel like they should be a part of something just to get forward in life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm kind of in and out with my okay. school. So, yeah.
But I wonder, because you go to Harris Stowe, that didn't have the same trajectory as a lot of the other historically black campuses. It was a hybrid. It came later to be a HBCU. So in the case of Caden, Tuskegee was one from the very beginning. So how would you answer this question, Caden?
Tuskegee is an interesting story to me. Sorry, I was muted. I love Tuskegee. I love my HBCU so much. And to speak to the point of, I guess, the questions that have been posed, I feel like it's best posed by saying there is every type of black person at HBCU. What I mean by that is you get love, you get hate, you get, like, very liberal and radical, and you get conservative. Unfortunately, my school is kind of more on the conservative side, but I still love my HBCU. We're a military school. And based off of, I find a little bit of hypocrisy in that, based off of the state of the world that we are in. At a time, it did serve a purpose, though. For example, World War II and the Red Tails. There's a lot of, like, history at Tuskegee that I love. For example, I'm in the Tuskegee Choir, and we have one of the world-renowned, most famous black composers of the world, and his name's William Dawson. But there's, like, Tuskegee, if you find an in-group, you can find a way to be successful. But if you don't, then there's not necessarily somebody looking out for you. It just kind of, you kind of have to find your way.
Mm.
There's going to be people there if you make friends and you find your, like, if you actively search for stuff, you will find it. But if you don't, you're not just going to be carried by an HBCU, unfortunately. But there is so much love there. There's so much good culture. Even outside of the aspects that I don't agree with, like the military, there's so much love at Tuskegee University that I couldn't give it up. That's my baby. That's my home.
And the conservatism might be based on the founder of that was conservative. So
yes. And then also, it's just like, we see the administrations and who controls money and who controls the purse strings tend to leave conservative, unfortunately, at HBCUs. And the U.S. government wants to figure out how to get more black people in their army program, Tuskegee. So, yeah, there's a lot of things here at my school. But there's a lot of, as many problems as there are, it's just as beautiful. So, I love it.
And I'm thinking, as you both are talking, that the universities, particularly the HBCUs, have not been immune to the politics of today. And we see that there's very much attacks on the funding. And even within the school departments, people are a little hesitant about saying different things. DEI programs have been cut. Mm-hmm. So people are moving more to the right and being more conservative, a fear of if they are perceived as being too radical or too pro-black, then something bad is going to happen to the funding. And so that's very unfortunate, because I've seen a lot of programs be cut in the time during the MAGA period. And even some black studies departments are being cut. And so that's very unfortunate. You know, I'm thinking as you all are talking about more about Cora Faith Walker, and you all, my first question is, did you know Cora Faith Walker before you applied for the scholarship?
No.
Okay, what about you, Caden?
I've heard of her name before because my mom's like involved in social work. But I did not know too much about her.
And I'm only asking that not to put you on the spot, because I know that when young people are looking for scholarship money, they got a list of stuff. And then somebody says, hey, I think you are good for this, why don't you apply for it? But other than that, you're like, here's my laundry list, I'm going to go and apply and see what I get. But I think one of the things that's pretty amazing about the two of you all is that you fit the core Faith Walker mold. And so what was it like for you to learn about who she is? Because when both of you all are talking, we're talking about like policies that negatively impact families and working people. She was a policy wonk. Wherever she was, whether it was a state representative, whether it was working as a policy director for executive director Sam Page, it was always about policy. What policies are in place that are helping or hurting people in my community? And so when I hear about your career possibilities, how do you see that fitting in with the vision of Cora Faith Walker?
For me, like, from speaking with Miss Drew and learning about her daughter, I could tell that she was very serious about her cause. Like, she did not play. And that's how I am. That's how I move with everything. That's how I move with wanting to be a psychologist. She basically inspired me when I heard about the things that she did, and I never knew who she was. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous, but
no, you're good. And I would say, Kira, while you're trying to close that thought, that if you have met the parents of Cora Faith Walker, and do you understand why she was all about family and all about making sure families get what they need? And you've had a chance to really interact with the Drews, Ed yes. and Robin. And so I think for you, it's more real.
Yes.
Yeah. So finish your thought. I thought I'd throw that in there, because family was really important to Cora.
Yes. And family is important to me. Even in the aspect of just like, even if it's like outside support, I feel like those people are just as much as family as your blood is, because that's what the Drews became to me. They became a family to me because of the support that they've given me since I started college. So that I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my words to
No, that's okay. I'm gonna go to Caden and let him answer that question.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. To speak on family with Cora Faith Walker, something that I recognized immediately was kind of the family dynamic within the people who have the scholarship. Is when I originally got the scholarship, like, all the past people who've got the scholarship and me kind of met together in the same room. We had a dinner and we just kind of had a good time. We're able to just like enjoy ourselves as a family and as a group and be there to support one another. And that was a great experience to kind of have that type of connection, even if it's not necessarily, we don't talk all the time, but it just like this connection is here, this family is here, and I really appreciated that. Even more so, Miss Drew, I could speak for, even in times in college when I didn't believe in myself, she believed it. She kind of had that, she was a very strong backbone in kind of my whole time being so in college so far, and I really am appreciative of that. And I see that inspiration from her and in Cora, and I'm really happy that I'm a part of this because it's beautiful to see this family.
Yeah, and that being said, that means you have a lot to, you're inspired, but you also have a lot to give based on the scholarship,
Yes.
because I would think that Cora is like, okay, mom, you know what I was, what I would believe in. Pick, select the folks that is going to carry on that legacy, and every all the wonderful young people that I met do really connect with that vision that Cora had. So you all are doing good and standing on her shoulders. I do want to talk a little bit about what the foundation has done. So if you're just joining us, we are talking about the legacy of Cora Faith Walker. Some of you knew her as the state representative, always an advocate for women. Always an advocate for families, always an advocate for health. And that's how she ended up being the policy director for St. Louis County Executive Sam Page, which is where she was working at the time of her untimely death. But always, always, there was no doubt in your mind what her values were, why she was advocating, and who she was advocating for. And so I think when you have that kind of clarity of purpose, then either you attract people who feel likewise, and you also repel the other people who that's not what their vision and values are. And so when you talk about Cora being very open and welcoming, she certainly knew who the enemies of those of our community were. And she had, as you said, Kira, she had no temperament for those people. And so yeah, I think, you know, when I the foundation is still very young, 4 years old this year, but have done so much. And you know, one of the things that's very interesting is that not only is there scholarships being given, but there are services now available for mental health and other kinds of services. And I'm reading now based on what I want to make sure I get it all in, but the foundation has connected with the Ferguson Youth Initiative, Black Male Scholars, a kids' coat drive for the winter, the CC House supporting unhoused, Nurses for Newborn. So the overarching thing when you hear that is that it's about policies. It's about improving the quality of life for children, women, and youth in this country and in this community. And so yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the Charlottesville massacre. You all weren't even born. You weren't even a twinkle in your parents' eyes because that was in 1976. But it was young people who had played a pivotal role in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. These school children refused to learn the South African language, which was being imposed on them. And they rebelled. And part of their protest, during a protest, the South African army fired upon these school kids, and two of them died. And one of them was Hector Peterson. And there was an iconic photo of one of the older school kids ki literally carrying the dead body of Hector. And that went viral even before we had the internet. And people would got so upset about that, but it was young people, and we've seen this over and over again. It was young people in the South who helped integrate the schools. It was young people in SNCC who said, you know, we are, you know, we make sure people get voted. So we know that young people, their energy, their vision, their vitality has been important to any struggle for human rights. How do you see young people in this country who seem to, many people criticize them for being distracted, self-centered, and some of that is the way they've been socialized in this last, you know, couple of decades. But clearly some young people see and accept the assignment about improving the lives, not just their own, not just, you know, making myself rich and getting a good job so I can do X, Y, and Z, but really understanding their place in helping transform the society that we live in. So how would you respond to the charge, the challenge of young people in today's society?
I can speak to that a little bit. It's a great question. Honestly, I feel like it's a very mixed bag. I personally have like a background in social justice and stuff like that, but I know that everyone else doesn't. I've been raised on that because my mom does things within the social justice field. She works for a company called Generate Health. And I recognize a lot of people in my generation don't necessarily have that same ambition, although saying that, there are just as many people that do. I've met just as many people who are radical as me and more people who are even more as I met that aren't necessarily interested. I think there's an interesting dichotomy because I have this roommate in college and he's not into politics whatsoever. He's not into anything. But stuff has been getting so crazy recently. He's just like, what? What is going on?
Right.
Like, yeah. It just, and I feel like that's been a push because things have been getting so bad recently. But it also comes with education. My generation is ironically the most educated generation so far in America, even with all the problems that we do have. And because of that, it has led us to become more generally left-swinging and liberal. And that kind of informs our decision-making and our policies that we want pushed and things that we strive for. Even though in the world of social media, it's very easy to get like in your own bubble and so focused on yourself. I fall towards this sometimes, but I still have that core of social justice at my core. So I feel like in my generation, it's a really mixed bag, whether people are really interested or not. So to speak to that.
Yeah. Kira, what would you say are the challenges for young people today? How they can really be a change agent?
I also feel like it's a education thing because, you know, yeah, I do feel that a lot is changing, like with the grocery prices, the police brutality, the ICE situation, the gas prices. That is causing like some of my generation to open their eyes and want to educate themselves more. But I feel like it's gonna take more than what they see on like the media a lot, because we are on social media, but it's gonna take more than that to get the information on politics at all. Like, they will have to do more research instead of listening to other people's opinions on something, so they able to form their own. But
I hear you, because one of the things I've heard from young people, because I still do a lot of work with youth and young adults, is the ones who are going off to college, some of them get this message from parents: do not go up there getting involved in that black stuff. You there to get your education and come back home and get you a good job. So you laugh again. I hear this frequently from, and they're asking me like, how should I deal with that? Because I know that I want to be involved in other things. Like, there's all kinds of social justice committees on campus. There's usually a black student association, and they want to be involved because, Kira, to your point, that's how they're going to get more information about the world that they're getting ready to like inherit. And so I do, but the other part of that, I understand why parents are saying that. I understand my own parent who was like, when they saw me involved in Black Student Association taking over administration buildings, is like, oh, my child, my baby, I didn't send it to that to do that. But at the same time, somebody has to do this work.
Yes,
Yes, they do. Yeah, and so it's going to be. And sometimes we know when we've been chosen. Like, I've been thinking and doing this for a very long time, and my mom probably knew when I went off to school that I was going to be involved in something, and all she could do is pray for my safety. But we cannot, and I've told parents this, and I've told young people this, we have to provide safety for our children to be politicized. I don't see any way around it. They're going to have to pick up the mantle of being change agents, because, and I think you might have pointed it out, Caden, that we came to this place where we are now with MAGA in control because people were not as active and more proactive as they could have been. So all of us have a responsibility, even young people. And so how do we keep them safe, but at the same time guiding them to be transformative beings and responsible beings when the world is crumbling around them?
That's really interesting right there. Because the world is crumbling around and falling down, how do you kind of find that middle ground between safety but also trying to stand up for something? From my experience, it's been really interesting because parents want what's, I guess, what happened, what worked for them. For example, the American dream. You go to college, you get a job, and you're good. That don't work. It hasn't worked, and it's definitely not working anymore. But because of that, it breeds kind of a conservative ideology of just like, okay, you do this and you're gonna be good and you're gonna be fine. My brother, he got a nuclear engineering degree in with energy, working with energy, and he hasn't been able to find a job for about a year now because the government has been shutting down so many different programs. But it kind of speaks to how that lifestyle's not necessarily working. So as younger people, we have to do something to fight back. This whole conversation, I've been thinking about this Tupac quote. He said, "You don't hear any loudmouth 30-year-old people. Everyone who's like younger, you hear them speaking out, and you hear them trying to push for things that are really important in the world." And I feel like to some extent, there kind of has to be that generational let go of, okay, we kind of need to pass the mantle to these younger people. Because even if we don't agree, that still needs to happen because there's some new ideas that need to be passed and they're going to be carrying this up and picking this up. So I think that's kind of something that needs to happen a little more. Unfortunately, we don't necessarily, as a generation, have a defined direction. I feel like a lot of stuff is decentralized now, and when it was back in the civil rights movement, stuff was a lot more centralized and it was easier to find a way to get involved, even though social media has expanded a lot of people's. It allows you to see everything, but that also creates a kind of blindness because since you can see everything, you have to sort through everything as well. So
And that could be overwhelming.
it is. And also, the social media platforms are controlled by the people in power. So you're not going to be hearing the sorts of things that would be pushing the mantle to get people involved. So that's
I think Kira said that's Jesus wants to speak to that. Go ahead. That's an amen.
So to piggyback off of what he said, I do feel like our parents' generation, like we are just expected to just get a job, we'll go to school, get a job, and then we're fine. And that's unrealistic right now because of, the programs that is being taken away. And just like what Kaden said about, like these social media platforms are owned by the higher ups. And when the young people are speaking out about these things, you're not gonna see that on your For You page. That is not even gonna come across your algorithm. They gonna shove that down and show some crap in your face. I'm seeing Trump doing this, Trump doing that, Trump going to the Knicks game, like you said. Like, that's not important. That's not what we want to see.
When Caden was talking about his brother, that's one of the reasons I started thinking more about this radio show and wrote the column, because I'm hearing more and more young people who did the right thing are in quite a bit of, debt for doing that, for going to college. And now they can't find a job. One young person I was, that worked with us last year, with his degree, ended up working at Panera Bread as a baker. So this again is to my point about, like, we haven't clear the way for young people to achieve their highest potential, because the barriers that have been placed on you all, they're still there and growing. They're getting taller and wider. So it just, you just bumping your head up against a stone wall. So I don't know what you do with a nuclear physics degree. You know, I think that's so unfair. I mean, you know, these tech jobs, you know, want you to come in and do this and that and the other. But now with AI and a more automation, which we haven't even prepared our young people for, like you might want to be rethinking that career that you've been so obsessed with since the age of five, because the world has changed. And so my thing is, like, I don't see us as adults really, like, taking off those rose-colored glasses and really giving it straight no chaser to our young people, like the kind of world that we're living in now. And it may not be where you're going to get that good job anymore that's paying six figures. In fact, you may be working minimum wage. You may be doing $15 an hour. And so that's the world that we're living in. And so I guess, you know, the few minutes that we have left, I'm wondering what kind of encouragement that you plan to give to young people, your peers around you. And you know, I know that young people are drawn to social justice work just because of that's how, you know, young people are. They're like, why is this happening? Who decided that? Why come I can't go there? And why come I can't? So they're full of questions at a certain point. But then I think, Kate, you might mention over a certain point, it keep just getting dumbed down. Like, that's not for you. That's not what you need to be doing. You need to be over here, over there, and completely crushing people's dreams. But, you know, to the young people who are open, who are trying to figure out how they can be a change agent in this world, what would be your advice to them right now? And I'm thinking about CORE's scholarship. I mean, there was an unprecedented 100 young people that signed up for it. And so now it's gotten very competitive. So the fact that you two managed to get through means you're pretty, pretty special young people. So somebody's going to be listening to you. So what's going to be your advice to young people about being a change agent?
I would say that young people now should definitely go with their beliefs and go with what they believe in. Because, like how you talked about how we have to feel safe with the politics and everything that's going on in the world, we as the young generation, we got to be that safety net for the other younger ones that come under us to be able to make a change. We gotta let them know that it's possible to happen, and it has to actually work. Like, it has to be in action that the change is going to happen. They have to believe that something will change, and us, Caden, all of us, we gotta be that safety net for them, the ones that's listening to us right now, that we got to set an example for them to know that there will be a difference. They will be able to chase their dreams and live their life, and whatever major that they going after, it will always matter.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty powerful. Caden, what do you think?
To speak to that, I feel like I have a couple things I would like to say, but I would say, first off, is having the power to believe in yourself. A lot of times it's really hard for people, at least people that I know in my generation, to really kind of have a lot of faith in themselves, because social media, there's so much stuff going on, and it's hard for you to really find a lot of negative stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's hard to find a sense of self in a world that doesn't like the way you look, but also is just so superficial. Finding a way to find mental stability in that. For example, I started meditating for like 10 minutes a day. That's been helpful for me. And I never thought I would actually meditate, but it's been something that I recognize helps me. Just find a way to get your mind right. That's one of the things I would say. The other thing is, I would say, is if you're not actively doing something, it's not going to get done. And my time in school, I've recognized I could try to join this event tomorrow, and it's not going to happen. It's not going to do it if I do it tomorrow. You got to do it right now when you don't want to do it, when you actively That's how you allow yourself to move forward, because you're doing the things you know you need to do at that current moment. And getting involved in stuff like that works out the exact same way. If you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to try to join this group tomorrow, it's not going to happen tomorrow, because then it's going to be the next day after that, the next day after that. You have to get on top of it while it's still hot. So I'll just say, have self, be able to believe in yourself, and to do the first thing, do the things that come to mind. A lot of organizations now, for example, you kind of spoke on this, are like shutting down some of the DEI things and kind of going safe with what they think is supposed to be right. But at the end of the day, they know it's not necessarily what they should be doing. A lot of my younger generation and my generation's been like, we don't have that same mentality of playing it safe, because we've not grown up like that. It's not fair to us to kind of, go conservative on policies that don't benefit us in a world that's crumbling around us. Why go more conservative when the world's already going conservative? It doesn't make sense. So I would just say, find sense of self, recognize nothing's going to get done if you don't do it, and to push against organizations that are going more conservative.
So I think that part about a sense of self is so important, because everything that young people, and I hate to be absolute, but I would say the majority of messages and images that young Black people get are negative and hateful. And so if you are bombarded with that on a daily basis, eventually you're going to internalize some of that, and you won't be able to know your full worth, your full self. And so I'm thinking about the difficulty of young Black folks at this particular time. What else might they need to help them navigate through an anti-Black country? I mean, really, it's dangerous almost, particularly for young Black males. And so I'm thinking as village mothers and village fathers, village, you know, people, how we can help protect you all so that the navigation is safe, but you still can express yourself freely. You can still pursue the things that you think a young Black male should pursue, or a young Black female should, or a young Black person should. What else can we be doing to support you?
I feel like the biggest thing for a lot of people who don't necessarily, aren't necessarily living up to that, is having a village. For me, having people that I can talk to, whether that be my safe space in college, my like three main friends, or like my safe space at home, my mom, my dad, my brother, having people that you can rely on is really important. And I know that a lot of people don't necessarily have that, because social media and also the environment that we live in, a lot of Black children don't necessarily have fathers or that parental structure that's strong. I would say just reach out to people who are like me, don't necessarily have that community, and try to bring them a part of the community. So I feel like that's the best thing you can really do.
And Kira, what advice do you give to the village adults to support you?
I feel for the adults to support me. It really does have to be like a huge like support on my life. Like I have to have a village too. Like we have to have a village. Like I feel that we should be taught about these things early on in our lives, about how it is to be Black in America. Like we express these struggles and what we gonna deal with when we are coming up, when you guys are raising us, so that we, like that young black kid that's getting pulled over, don't get shot for nothing.
Right.
Like, I feel that we should be taught this early on, instead of us just going out in the world not knowing nothing. So I do feel like that the village need to be more, just more realistic about how the world is, and that way I feel that we will grow up to be, I feel that we will be able to grow up to be able
Well,
to
first of
live.
all, you'll be able to grow up. You'll be alive to grow up.
Yeah, allowed to grow up in this crazy world. So, yes.
So young people, you all have your assignment. Adults in the village, we have ours. You have heard it from the two recipients of the Core Faith Walker Scholarship, and they have done it very eloquently. So I thank you all for joining us. Thank you for sharing. If people want to know more about the Core Faith Walker Scholarship, they can go to that website by the same name. It's in the foundation. And we are going to close out with a song called Dance Wide. And I think that's an appropriate title for a song dedicated to Core Faith, because part of dancing is not just physically, it's also spiritually and intellectually. And Core danced wide, and she touched a lot of people. So let's leave out with that and be inspired again. I hope I can get this going.
It is with sincere humbleness that I present the song, Dance Wide, Chorus. It is an honor to have helped to write this with Jeff Wood and Bill Stumpa. It is a song that pays tribute to the memory of Cora Faith Walker. She was, and her spirit is, one that captures the full embrace of life itself. She was a force of change, compassion, and human rights as a Missouri State Representative and the Policy Director for St. Louis County. Cora played out the song she held in her heart and worked so that the people could hear it too. Dance Wide encompasses Cora's joy and humility to never lose her song while dancing wide in its power.
A lot of my focus has been on trying to eliminate disparities and really advance and promote justice and equity and health.
Can you hear the music? Feel the beat? Stare in the whisper of the breeze. It's in the roar of the bass as the oceans roll. Can you feel it flowing through your soul? Oh, the rhythm of life will guide your steps. Set your feet to dancing. So go on, get lost in the melody. Come at your voice to the harmony. You got a song waiting there inside, calling you to dance. So dance wide, dance wide. If you miss a step back, music plays. Oh, keep on moving. Find your way through the twists and turns, just keep on your toes. Dance until you find the flow. Oh, and the rhythm of life will guide your steps. If you just keep on dancing, go on, get lost in the melody. Come at your voice to the harmony. Got a song waiting there inside. It's calling you to dance. Dance wild, dance wild. Oh, dance on through the highs and lows. Dance on whether fast or slow. Just dance until your music leads you home. And it leads you home. Go on, get lost in the melody. Come at your voice to the harmony. You got a song waiting there inside. It's calling you to dance. Go on, get lost in the